Hi, Croeso. Hello and welcome to the latest episode of the CC4 Museum of Welsh Cricket Podcasts. This week we talk to Joe Lamb, resident and long-time member of Llandudno Cricket Club. Joe is employed by Cricket Wales as a cricket development officer. Before telling us about his work, we talked about both his playing days and his coaching at his local club. And we began, as we often do, with Joe telling us a little bit about himself.
Okay, thank you, Stephen. So, Croes and all, Gogledd Cymru, welcome to North Wales. Thank you very much for inviting me along today, Stephen. It's a real honour for me to be on this podcast. Thank you so much. So my name's Joe Lamb. I've just turned 61 years old. I was born in Bangor in the early 60s. And my parents actually were of Irish descent. And for the first 3 years of my life, believe it or not, I lived in Capelcurrig. I'm sure everyone in Wales has heard of Capelcurrig because it's the place where they get the most rainfall in Wales. By rights, I should be a Welsh speaker having been born there, but I'm not. I'm really sorry about that. Dipping back. So I was born there, and in 1966, my parents bought a guest house in Llandudno, they ran the guest house for a number of years, and that's where I was brought up. They were very Catholic people, so I went to church, I went to Catholic schools. They ran a small guest house, and I was involved in that, helping out. Probably not as much as I should, but I got involved with that, and that's where I ended up in Llandudno. And Llandudno, as people will know, is one of the most beautiful towns in Wales. It's an absolutely fantastic town. It's a very holiday town. We attract a lot of people in the summer. The population goes from about 25,000 to 5-6 times that in the summer. But it's a beautiful, beautiful town on the North Wales coast.
Okay, you could tell us a little bit more about Llandudno in a little while. But yeah. What about your first sporting experiences? Were they at home with the family or elsewhere?
So I picked up sport through school, as kids did probably in that day. I was a keen football lover. I love my football. I think the first time I got to know football was around the 1970 World Cup final. And I happened to turn on the television and I was watching Pelé play and Jorginho. And when they won against Italy in the final, you know, they were probably one of the most iconic teams ever in football. And then from that on, I followed that. And that was my main sport, football. And then I got into cricket suddenly. So our guest house was right in the centre of the town. I happened to one day stumble upon the Oval in Llandudno. There was a match on. It was a lovely summer's day. There was people sitting in deck chairs all round the ground, clapping the cricket, plenty going on. It was idyllic. And I can recall that perhaps as an early memory of just going along there, thinking, wow, this looks amazing. What an amazing thing to be part of. I would love to be part of that. And luckily around the time when that was happening, there was some revival in junior cricket in the club. So I went along to the club and I got joined in there and I started playing. And there wasn't many of us at that time. And I was quickly drafted into the second team, probably when I was 12 or 13, as maybe one or two juniors. I think the rest were senior men. There was no ladies playing then. I got into trouble a lot of times. I was a bit of a misbehavioral child, and I would get told off by my peers sometimes for my behaviour and how I was. But I love the whole game. I love the challenge of it. I love batting. I wasn't much of a bowler, and I love batting. I just got grabbed by it, by the bug, and it's been with me ever since. And you know, that's where I started.
Or were you also attracted by cricket on the television, like kind of watching Test cricket or anything like that? Were you doing that as well?
Yeah, so at home it would tend to be the test matches. I can remember probably my earliest memory of the 1976 series, the England series, when the West Indies came over and Viv Richards was in his pomp, and the very hot summer, and the ground's been scorched, and West Indies seeming to bat all the time, and England not batting very long, and all the fast bowlers going on, and I remember names like Boycott. Dennis Amos was another one who had a pretty good series. The West Indian players, Viv Richards, Clive Lloyd, and around that time and into the 80s, it was the West Indies that dominated cricket, as everyone will be aware. And I was brought up through that. I remember practicing. So my practice was in the back lane behind the house, with a friend of mine, who's still around now, Paul. And he would bowl to me, and the bin would be the wicket. And we had a very short corridor of where we could bat, because if we didn't hit the ball straight, the ball would go over into someone's wall. So you had to learn to bat straight. And my wife called me when I played a plodder. I was a plodder. I liked to hang around. I never scored many runs, but I hung around. And people would probably laugh at me these days in the era of 2020 cricket, but again, I was brought up on that era of when people bat long. You know, your Jeff Boycott, your Dennis Amos, people would bat long around that time. It was about batting and batting long and not giving away your wicket. And I practiced that as best I can. And I used to get on people's nerves because they couldn't get me out. They couldn't get me out. So that was my basis for playing cricket. And I probably throughout my life, even these days when I coach, very much basic things are to make sure you don't give away your wicket, to get in. Things have changed now, the game's changed. No, it's very much about playing your shots now, which I totally agree with, absolutely. But I'm still a believer that you've got to have those basics right, those basics of making sure you don't give away your wicket, and then you can move on from
Am I allowed to ask what some of your misdemeanors were? You said you were a bit of a rogue.
Oh, I would take people's caps and I'd wear them in front of them, and they'd be looking at me, and then they'd click, and some people would react to it well, and some people would react to it very badly and grab the cap off my head, or I'd put something in the kit bag, or I'd remove something and put something in other people's kit bag. I can remember the night before my GCSE or O levels, as they were in those days. Instead of revising, I'd be down playing cricket. And for me, sport was everything, and cricket was everything, and it always has been, and through my life, and it's been a bug that's been very hard to shake off. I've always had it in my life. I think as I've got a little bit older, I've sort of realised that you have to have that little bit of time. You've got to have time for yourself as well as time for cricket, and it's cost me through my life. I've had some problems through my life with maybe relationship breakdowns because of cricket. And it's been because of cricket. And if anyone said to me, advice for cricket is, yes, have cricket, love cricket, adore cricket. It's the greatest game, absolutely the greatest game for everything, for the discipline, the concentration, and for the technique. But have that time, but also have your time. I think that's a really important thing. And I've learned that as I've got older.
Okay, you mentioned a little bit about Llandudno, the town. Do you
Yeah.
want to tell us a little bit about its sporting traditions?
Yeah, so probably very strong on rugby. The rugby's very strong here in the town. When I started playing cricket, there was a little. There's been some manoeuvres of grounds over the years in my time, and the oval where Llandudno play at one time was used for all three sports. So there was the hockey club used to have a big Easter festival in Llandudno. Clubs would come from everywhere, from Cheshire, Manchester, all over the country to come and play in a massive hockey festival here in Llandudno. At that time, hockey was played on grass. I'm sure it probably isn't now, I would imagine. I think most hockey now seems to be played on artificial pitches. So hockey was a big part of the town. The Easter festival would attract thousands and thousands of people. So that would be played on the oval. So we had what we call the Sports Association, where so the cricket played there in the summer, then just before that the hockey played, and then the football would play, and then I think in later years then the rugby came to the town. The rugby now has moved on. It's situated at its own ground. The football is now situated at its own ground. I can remember with a hockey club now, I think the hockey club play on artificial, but I can remember over Easter, a hockey club had put up all the goals. So we would go down and play football in front of the goals, which is, thinking back, probably not great for the hockey club because hockey likes a nice, smooth surface, doesn't it? And we'd be playing in the goals late at night. There'd be nets up. Fantastic. Kids love nets, don't they? When football's played, we'd be playing the nets and we'd get scattered off and told, come on, we've got hockey tomorrow and the match is going on. So it is a sporty town. We've had Llandudno Football Club have now got their own pitch. They've had some issues last couple of years with resurfacing the ground. They play on 3G now. The rugby club are quite a successful club. They've had some good runs in the Welsh Cup the last few years. I think they played last week down in South Wales, or the week before, and they just got beat. But they're very strong traditionally. Cricket in the town probably might not have been as strong as the other two sports, but cricket has been going on in Llandudno. In fact, I was researching the book, which I'll speak to you about later. Cricket started in Llandudno. The club that got up and running was around 1865. So the club has been here for a long, long time.
You started as a 11, 12-year-old playing at the
Yes.
club.
Yes.
Did you graduate up into the first 11, Joe? Is that how it went for you?
I did, Stephen. So I played a couple of years in the second team, opening the batting. I remember I'd opened the batting with a gentleman who's still around called Alan Hughes, who'd been around a long time, very steady player. And then I tend to run him out, so he wouldn't be very happy with me because I was young and I was probably a little bit quicker than him, and I probably thought there was a run sometimes. And especially early in my cricket, I didn't perhaps think of him; I just thought of me. And then from then on, I'd done quite well in the second team, started playing in the first team. I think I played in the first team when I was 15 or 16. I kept wicket. The first team had some really good players at that time. We had a very fast bowler called Dave Robertson, who I kept wicket to. Even wearing the gloves, used to sting my hands with the gloves when I kept him because he was super, super fast. He was quite a, and Dave's still around today. He was a very, very good player, an all-rounder. And I ended up opening the batting with him as well. And we'd always do quite well. So probably we'd bat, probably how T20 bats these days. We'd bat, we'd get in and we'd bat for 10 overs. We'd have 70, 80 on the board. Really good. Of which I probably got about 10 and he probably got above 70 because he was a really, really big hitter. But what I was strong on was giving him the strike and making sure he had enough of the strike as he could. He was a great player. I think he got as far as Glamorgan seconds. He played a couple of games to Glamorgan seconds. I admired him totally as a player. I can remember one day playing a match. I think we were playing at Connah's Quay one day. Me and him opened the batting and he was going like a train. He was hitting the ball everywhere and I ran him out. And I was gutted, and I seen him go off the field, and my heart sunk, and a few overs, and I didn't get my head up. I got my head down, and I felt really bad. A couple of overs I later, I got out, and I was dreading going off the field, as you do when you run someone out. And I got off the field, and he was over there, and he called me over, and he said, "Joke me." He said, "Are you okay?" I said, "Yeah, well, I'm really sorry for running you out, Dave." And, he said, "Absolutely no problem. It's no problem at all. It's the nature of the game. We bat like that aggressively. These things can happen." And he chatted with me for about 10 or 15 minutes. And I took so much admiration about that from the man who was going well. And for him, probably that was my first taste of, hang on, it's only a game here. It doesn't really matter. At the end of the day, life goes on. I ran him out, but you do a great job. We really bat well together. And I took so much from that, from him. And he was a real player of stature, someone I really, really looked up to. And just having that and giving that over. And I would like to think that I've tried to do that in my coaching life. It was a real thing that impressed upon me on that time, and how people were with you and how still he was, and how, for an aggressive player on the field, he was so nice off the field as well. And that stuck with me, and I love that. I love that. I was an okay player. I wasn't outstanding. I played for Carnarvonshire a couple of times around then. The counties were the old Carnarvonshire, the Merionethshire, the Denbighshire, Flintshire sides. So I played a few times for Carnarvon. I wasn't an outstanding player. I was a decent club cricketer, but nothing outstanding. And then the influx of pros came in into the game. I remember, I think we got off, we had some Pakistani players in the late 70s that came over and proed for us. We had one gentleman who went on to play in the 1992 World Cup, a leg spinner called Iqbal Sikander. And he played for Pakistan in the 92 World Cup when they won. I think he played one game in the semi-final when they beat New Zealand. And he was a great leg spinner, absolutely amazing leg spinner. So yeah, memories there, great memories, great matches, great social occasions. I love the social occasion. I love being part of the social occasion. I love teas. We always talked about going to away matches and where was the best tea and things like that. That was the day of teas. So I think that's another thing that attracted me to the game, the social side, the tea side, the camaraderie, the friends who you meet.
I'm guessing that there were a number of other roles that you performed along the way as well. Do you want to tell us about those, Joe?
Yes, Stephen. So as it is in a club, and most people know that in a club you get involved in all sorts of things. So over the years, I've served behind the bar in the club. I've had committee roles in the club. I've been secretary in the club. I've been fundraising secretary. I was lucky enough and quite honoured enough to be chairman for about 5 years in the early 90s, and it was quite a big time for the club because. The old pavilion that we had at the time was ramshackled, and we were quite campaigning to get a new pavilion. And I was very involved with that, the talks with the local authority around that time. And we were very, very lucky enough to get a new pavilion back in 1992. It's the pavilion that's still there now. And me and a few others were involved meeting with the council on quite a regular basis. We had some heated conversations, I'll tell you, at times. Not so much with the council, but within our committee. And around that time, also, I mentioned about the association that was going on earlier with the three clubs that was disbanded. And we decided, as a cricket club alone, to take on the whole Oval. And that was a big gamble for us as well at the time. But if it didn't happen without a pavilion, we were sort of forced into it that if it didn't happen, then it may well have been that. The cricket might not have gone on any longer in Llandudno. So I guess our hand was forced. Looking back, it was, wow, it was quite an experience getting involved with that and doing things that I'd never ever done before. I wasn't aware of things like that. I worked in local government for years. My job for years was in local government. So I touched on local government. I was involved in the finance side and the benefit side. The later years I worked in housing, but to deal with the sort of planning side of things, the funding side of things like that. Pavilion, from memory told, cost the council about 150, 160,000 pound, which in the whole scheme of things these days probably doesn't sound a lot. When you hear some of the grants that are going on, but then it was quite a lot of money. I then became third team captain. I think I mentioned to that. I was really honoured to do that because that role helped me go through the club and get some juniors into playing senior cricket and trying to bridge that gap. And I've coached from the late 80s onwards. So we're here today, 89. I've probably coached since then. So what are we talking? 20, 30, 35 years involved in coaching at the club as a volunteer. Never been paid at the club. I wouldn't want to be paid at the club. So my role has been trying to bring younger players through for all that time.
How's your coaching kind of developed?
Okay, well, and I think around the late 80s, our club wasn't the strongest club, and I think we realised we needed to get a lot of juniors into the club and get them playing. And around that time, there's quite a drive, especially in North Wales, to try and get coaches on board. There's a great chap again who's still around called Peter Everson. From Bangor, who ran the Coaches Association for a number of years. And Peter was a great driver of cricket in North Wales to get people on board and coaches on board. And I was lucky enough to be coached by the great Tom Cartwright. Probably people will have heard of Tom Cartwright. He played for England. He came up to North Wales especially to coach us. He was an amazing man, and he'd tell us some of the stories. And I loved listening to his stories because, of course, he played at the top level. And he came up to coach us, and I did what was the core, it's core coaching now. It was the old level two with him. And I think that was around late 88, 89, and he came up and did that. He used to talk about basics. He would say the basics. He would say to me, if there's anything wrong with a player, it will be something to do with a grip, stance, or backlift. And they were the three things that he used to say, if people are struggling in cricket, grip, stance, or backlift, he would say they would be the main things. If one of those aren't right, then probably you'll struggle. Most of the times if people are struggling, it'll be one of those issues. I'm a great believer in trying to give something back in cricket. Cricket has been good to me for all those years. And I think, and especially if you've been a player, you have fantastic knowledge. You can give that back to the young kids. I've met some many interesting people. I still see kids now who come along with their kids now who I coach. So that tells me I'm getting old, Steve. But that's great, isn't it, that they remember me and see me. I went to the, I work in my Cricket Wales job. I work in a local school, and one of the teachers came along and said to me, "Do you remember me?" I said, "No." He said, "I used to come to your cricket coach when I was a little boy." "Did you really?" I couldn't remember him because I've seen many hundreds and hundreds of kids. But I love that. I love that people coming up to say, "I really enjoyed it. Thank you very much for giving me that opportunity." You know what? That's gold for me. That means the world.
You say you were a batsman as a player.
Yeah.
How do you approach coaching bowling as someone who's perhaps, wasn't a bowler when in your playing days? Is it difficult to do that, or what?
Not really. No. I think it's really important to have a balance, to look at the person or the child that's starting to bowl. Make sure that they're bowling straight. Make sure, talk to them about their line, talk to them about their length. Try not to make things too complicated, especially when they're younger. Again, when I work in schools, a lot of kids won't bowl with a straight arm. They'll bowl with a bent arm. So stressing the basics to them, making sure your arm's straight, trying to keep yourself momentum straight towards the wicket or the batter. Touching on things like your run-up, maybe helping people mark the run-up. Talking about maybe falling over, trying to keep it as straight as possible. Talking about either side on a chest on bowling. So keeping it pretty basic, I would suggest, especially at a younger age. I think the technicalities come in when they're a little bit older. As a core coach, as a level two coach, you can take people so far, but sometimes you have to bow to the people who've got better qualifications and better knowledge than myself. I work at the moment with my daughter attends an academy in Chester, and I work with an amazing guy there called Brad Dunellan, who is an amazing man. He's been so good to me, and he works and he runs an academy. And when you go along to the academy and you see how he works with the kids and sort of fine-tuning them, his knowledge is vast. He's an ex-player, and he's an amazing man. So I guess, as you move up the chain and you see other people with more experience than you, I think it's really important to listen to them and understand them and learn from them. Because as a coach, you're still learning, you're always learning.
We've talked a lot about you volunteering at your club and coaching, but you're now, of course, it's your job. You're a community coach or cricket development officer. What's your title? Tell us a little bit about how the jobs came up at Cricket Wales and how you got involved in all of that.
So in when I was about 53, 54, I was made redundant from the local authority. I was knocking around doing a few jobs a few years. I ended up working at the Housing Association because I got a bit of a background in working in housing. And then COVID came in, and COVID was really difficult working with housing. We were working at home. We're having to work a lot as well going into the projects, and a lot of agencies wouldn't do that. So we ended up really being quite isolated, working with some very, very vulnerable people. And things became quite difficult for me. I must admit, I struggled with that. And then I spoke to Sue Wells, who's our manager in North Wales. I've known Sue for a number of years through my volunteering work. I said to her, I think I rang her one day. I said, "Sue, is there any work going on Cricket Wales? Is there any opportunity for a job?" So a job came up. It was only a part-time job. It was only something like 20 hours a week working as a community coach. And I spoke to my employers then at the time, and to be fair to them, they were quite happy that a job shared. So I reduced my hours with the Housing Association and started working for Cricket Wales. After a few months, the funding increased, the amount of money that came into Cricket Wales increased, some of our partners, and a job came up as a full-time role. And I snapped the hand off. She offered it me, and I snapped the hand off. And it was just a fantastic opportunity. It's basically what I've been doing for years and years and years, coaching kids, but doing it as a job. We now do a lot of work with clubs as well. We do a lot of work with the Lord's Taverners. I work in an SEN school locally, and Chance to Shine are our other charity partners. So they work in state schools, giving kids, it's a cricket charity, giving kids the opportunity to cricket. And Lord's Taverners, we're doing a lot of work with those as well now in some of the SEN schools locally and in North Wales. So a lot of my colleagues work in SEN schools as well. So my role is quite diverse. I work in schools. We try to target schools perhaps that are in areas of poverty. So we'll do whole school programs, which means we'll work with schools over 4 or 6 weeks, going in each week. Then we have what we call engagement days, working with schools, maybe going in for a day, trying to get around as many schools as possible. Then I do a little bit of work with the SEN schools. I then work on festivals in the summer. We work now with clubs more than ever now, so we're trying to help clubs lift their junior levels. As we know, as part of accreditation now for clubs have to have various age groups, and especially the clubs in the higher leagues have to have various age group schools, club sorry, age level teams. We do a little bit of work as well, pushing Dynamos and All Stars into schools. And trying to get them into clubs as well. So it's a great job, Stephen. It's a wonderful job. I work with some wonderful people across here in North Wales, and Mid Wales. Some really, really good coaches, passionate about the game. And throughout Wales, when we meet as a team, now and then. And the coaches that work within Cricket Wales are passionate about cricket.
There's a lovely story that involves you, Joe, and two people by the names of Anna and Margarita. Do you want to tell
Yes.
us a little bit about them and their story?
Yeah, well, Anna and Marita, so that's mother and daughter. So a couple of years ago, I went into a school, as I do in the morning. You just go in, as I said, you don't know what you're going to see. And I went into the school this day, and there was a young lady part of the group, and there was a fellow pupil following around with an iPad, which was quite unusual. So I had to ask the teacher, why was the case? Is everything all right? Is there something that I need to be aware of with the child? And she explained to me that Anna had recently come here from the Ukraine, and the pupil following around was translating into English words I was saying, which I thought was amazing anyway. And she started playing cricket, and she seemed to be quite a good little player. I was quite impressed with her, considering that. I'm not sure how much cricket is played in Ukraine. I doubt whether there is much cricket played in Ukraine. Certainly not at the moment, there won't be. And I went back, and again, that made an impression on me. And I just spoke to the teacher, and they explained to me a little bit about the background, that they settled here in North Wales. They'd only been here a few months. And I thought it would be really nice for her to take part in cricket. So I spoke to Sue. Sue and I suggested that she come to Llandudno. And at the time, we were running our girls' dynamos evening sessions once a week. So I contacted the school. The school contacted the parents. We invited her along to come to the sessions. She came along with her family, signed up, attended the sessions. I met her family. I was very lucky enough to meet her family, and they told me the story of how they ended up here in Wales and the travel they had to do and what they had to go through in Ukraine, which was mind-blowing for me, really. But so I met her. We carried on doing that. She attended the sessions weekly. She loved cricket. her family got involved in cricket. They came to the club on a regular basis. I then put her forward to Chance to Shine for the National Awards. Her and I and her mum got invited down to Lords. And although she didn't win an award, her story was so, it was mind-blowing really, as to where she'd been and how she ended up. Since then, she's applied to go onto the pathway into North Wales. She's got into the pathway. She plays now on the pathway. She plays regularly for the softball team here. She's transitioned to hardball now as well, which is a big issue for a lot of kids. It's just an amazing story, and it was so quite unique that we managed to get her involved and get her family involved and get them involved in a game probably that no one's ever heard of from her original country. And I'm very proud to have done that. I've also worked with one or two other children who've come from real, real poverty backgrounds, managed to get them into cricket. Some of them are moving on and moving on into pathway. And I think for me, one of the biggest things about cricket is that wherever the child comes from, wherever their background and whether they're from, we must give them that opportunity. We must strive to give them that opportunity.
Do you feel very optimistic about the future of the sport?
I do. I do. I think that our partners, Chance to Shine and Lord's Taverners, are investing, and I think there's more money being invested into grassroots cricket. I think that's really important. I think, as I said, from a rurality point of view, we need to get out to as many schools as possible and give them that taste of cricket. I would like to see links between clubs and schools improve. I think that's a really important thing to happen. I think perhaps that hasn't been there in the past, and I think we need to do that. I don't want poverty to be an issue. I know it's very difficult, and it's a difficult time at the moment for everyone. And cricket maybe is just one small thing where people have to look at and whether it's affordable for them or not. And I know so many people, I go into so many schools, and children will say to me, "How much does it cost?" And they'll say, "My mummy or daddy can't afford that." And they will say it to me, and it breaks my heart hearing that, Stephen. So we run these programs. I think the All Stars program and the Dynamos program have been great programs. I think we don't always get numbers, especially on the All Stars, because people can't afford it. They can't afford it. So £40 is the charge. It's been like for a number of years. £40 is a lot of money to people. Money shouldn't ever be an issue for people playing the game. And I am excited about the game. I think the women's and girls game is moving on massively. I think that's been a great asset. I think all cricketers have enhanced that now and are taking it on. And I think we all recognise that has made such a difference to the game. Having a woman's section in your club has it's changed our club here completely. Changed our club. The influence that they've had, working on the facilities, making the facilities better. I think that's a great thing, and we must carry that forward. And the opportunities now for girls cricket. My daughter goes to the academy, and her and I are going in March to India. We're going on a trip to India. And there's me in the 60s. I never thought I'd ever go to India. So I'm going out there, I'll do a bit of coaching. She's going out to play there for a week. And she has the opportunity. She goes down to South Wales and works with the Wales squad every other week. Amy Rees does a fantastic job. And another girl I need to mention is Rachel Warringer. Rachel Warringer, who is the girls and ladies officer for North Wales, has done a fantastic job fostering ladies and girls cricket in our area. I'm also a great believer that we need to get many young coaches in and working. So when I'm lucky enough now, I work on the North Wales Girls Hub. I do a boys' hub in Menai Bridge every other week. I have some younger coaches, and it's great to work with younger coaches. And if I can give a little bit back to those younger coaches, because I'm not going to be around forever, Stephen, and the game has to continue with those younger coaches, and we need to develop them and nurture them and learn from them. Like I learned from Tom Cartwright or Dave Robertson, those stories I had earlier.
You mentioned earlier that you'd been doing a little bit of research about the history of Llandudno Cricket Club. Was there a book you wanted to mention to us?
There was. A gentleman wrote it called Jeff Nichols, who is a long-standing member of the club. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to bring that along to, I'm in Cardiff tomorrow with Caris. So I'm going to bring that along tomorrow, I'm going to drop it off there. I'd like to donate that to the museum.
And what's
So
it
that's a
called,
history.
Joe? What's the book
It's
called?
called Last Man Standing.
Okay.
And it's a lovely book. Plenty of pictures in there. It's going back years and years. 1865 was when the club first started, allegedly. I wasn't around then, Stephen, but that's when it started. And I'm also going to donate a club cap. So I'll donate that quite happily for the museum. Jeff has really researched the book. There's some great articles in there. He talks especially about the great era of the club when they won the Welsh Cup in 2006, and we were winning Premier League after Premier League. So it's a really good read. Some books are still available. He'd probably be glad that I'm pushing the book now. But some books are still available. But I'll happily donate that to your museum with pride. It'll be a remembrance of me that I've been able to do this podcast with you today. So.
Well, thank you for letting us into your intoxication with the game of cricket, Joe. It's been lovely listening to you.
My pleasure. Lovely to meet you, Stephen. Good luck to the museum.
Okay, thanks a lot.
All right. All the best.
Many thanks to Joe for giving up his time to talk to us and to share his cricketing story. Next time on the podcast, we begin a series of episodes chatting to, well, there's no doubt about it, a Glamorgan legend, Matthew Maynard. Matt recently left Glamorgan after his second spell there as coach. We will be talking to him about his cricketing story, which took him from Menai Bridge on Anglesey to the greatest cricket grounds of the UK. From his local cricket club to the changing rooms at Lord's, Trent Bridge, Headingley, and the Oval. I look forward to bringing you his story. The first part of our chat will air on the 8th of March, so do join us then for some more stories about the great game of cricket from the great country of Wales. Hwyl fawr, bye for now.